Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast show, 160-something, I think, Body. Are we in the 170? Hello, my friend. How are you?
I'm excited because, once again, in the NBL Grand Final Series, we've seen one of the games decided by a freak shot.
Yeah.
And as we saw 12 months ago when Jack McVay hit that big one for Tasmania. So, yeah, I'm loving the way this series is between Melbourne and Illawarra is starting to settle in. What about yourself?
Well, you called that a freak shot. The one that Chris Golding shot was nearly a freakier shot that went in. Yeah. But we'll talk about that as well. I want to start with the WNBL final. When we last spoke, obviously, it was 1-0. I know I certainly predicted Townsville to win at home. You can't score 55 points and win a finals game. That's not going to happen, in my opinion. Bendigo, 63 points. Sammy Whitcomb, what a season. What a year. What a couple of years. Outstanding. Congratulations to Bendigo. But no shock, Body. Would that be right?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember you said this time last week, you said, would it be a shock if Townsville won the series? And I said, no, it wouldn't be because they changed their lineup and brought in Nia Coffey.
Yes, that's right.
But Bendigo absolutely shut her down. Her two grand final performances, especially offensively, were abysmal. Veronica Burton did a great job defending her. She wasn't the only one that defended her, but she did the primary work. And when you take a three-pointer and it gets blocked, I reckon that messes with your head. Yeah. And I just... full credit to Bendigo. Look, we've said it all along. It was theirs to lose, and they chose not to lose it because they've got that experience. How about this? How about this, Brad? Kelly Wilson, 41 years old. Kelsey Griffin, 37 years old. Sammy Whitcomb, 36 years old. Mariana Tola, 35. Casey Samuels off the bench, 30. Abby Wierung, 29, turning 30. This is the oldest team in the history of the WNBL to win the championship.
Wow.
And it proves the old Hungarian saying that you've probably heard from your wife along the way that the best stew brews in an older pot.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, once you turn 50, I'm going to go to a younger man. But that's what I heard my whole life.
That's what she says. Yeah, I have heard that. Sorry, I didn't mean to bring that up. I know it's an ugly moment for you.
Did you see me scratching my head then? I started getting a bit anxious. Look, to talk about what you're saying, and I think it's some stats that are really interesting. Townsville shot 59 shots for 55 points, right? Yeah. And they made 20. 33.9% from the field. Let's call it 34. They shot 3 of 24 from the three-point line.
Honestly, it was ugly.
Like, that is just terrible. And then you talk so much about Bendigo. They shot 58 shots, so one less, but they made more, obviously. They shot 40% from the field, but only 6 of 20 from the three-point line. It was one of those, I'm sitting there watching it. I watched the whole game, and I enjoyed it. And there was one, it just stood out to me that this is an old-fashioned grand final where just going to be a fight. What else did you see?
Oh, look, honestly, I thought that once again that Lauren Cox let Townsville down. That first quarter, she was scoring inside and she was the main throw. I think she might have had 13 of her points in the first quarter. And then once again, as she did in game one, she fell in love with the three-point shot. And, you're 1 of 6 in game one, you're 1 of 6 in game two. Love, they're leaving you open for a reason. Get inside where you were. And now, as the game's worn on and she's become less of a threat, who's become the big winner for Bendigo? Mariana Tolo. She's not leaving the keyway. She's not going out to areas that she's not interested in. Plays within her lane, dominated the game, was great at both ends, double-figure points and rebounds. Quality performance. And Sammy was just all over it.
Well, what I loved is there was some run there in the fourth quarter by Townsville, and I just like there was a lot of screen and rolling activity between Sammy Whitcomb and Mariana Tolo, and it just made me think veterans finishing the play, and I actually loved it. It was old-fashioned basketball where, you know what, we're not just going to drive, kick, kick, kick. Let's hope we hit a three, right? It's let's get back to our bread and butter. You've got the best guard in the league. One, if not the best big in the league. No disrespect. I'm sure you don't have an answer for that, but I'm coming from. And it was like just rolling on in there, and all Tolo had to do was finish around the rim, and she did it amazingly. So, congratulations to Bendigo.
What they did, they showed the blueprint in game one. It's 41 all going into the last quarter. They go 29-19 in the last quarter. Those veteran players just know how to lift it. And in that last quarter, Abby Wirung hit a three, which put them 10 up. And so Townsville was chasing. To their credit, they chased all the way, but these guys knew how to win it. And it was a terrific – I'm so happy for Kennedy Kiriama. He's done a lot of hard yards in this league as an assistant and as a head coach back in the early days in Western Australia. But also full credit to Townsville – people, you know what was going on last week with the cyclone, all that stuff that was happening. They showed up and packed that place out, 5,500 people. Hats off, great performance.
And well done to the Bendigo contingent. There was enough there that made a noise. I certainly heard it. So that was great as well. Yeah, it was great.
That country folk, they're wild.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was good. Also, I just want to give a little bit of a shout out to Scotty Becker. It's a referee who I've had many of run-ins over my years when he was coaching NBL 1 and I was coaching there. Oh, sorry, when he was reffing and I was coaching. Yeah. He's announced his retirement. And to be honest, I texted him after the game. And see, I'm being honest again, Boddy. Did you like that? I got some feedback out of that last week.
I'm getting used to that now.
I got some feedback out of that last week because my wife said to me, can you start with me now, not just Boddy? But and I texted him and it was just really nice. Like, you know, every time I see him at an NBL game, although he hasn't done many lately, it's been bought WNBL. We still have a little bit of a laugh. So congratulations to Scotty on a good career. I know it's just his body, like hamstrings, legs, and it's like it's a lot. So congratulations to Bendigo. We finished the year and a well-deserved win by them and the league team throughout the season. Before we go to the NBL, I want to go through some news, though. There's been a lot this week. So I'm going to start it off, and I'm going to say Andrew Bogut has been announced to the Sydney Kings as an assistant coach. Now, Daniel Kickett announced earlier in the week that he is moving on. No news where he's going. What's your thoughts of this? Because I'm going to have my thought after yours, though. Go for it.
Look, I think Andrew is an interesting choice because he's a man with a strong opinion. Yes. So he's, you know, being second fiddle. I'm curious, Brad, if this may not be a sort of a succession plan. Like, see if Andrew knows his stuff and can convey it and has good communication skills with the players. He's there doing an apprenticeship with Brian Gorgian, the GOAT. So if it's a succession plan, I kind of like it, but. He's a strong-willed character, so I'll be to see how that dynamic goes. Go, Brad, what do you got?
Well, for me, I loved what Cope said in the NBL show before. He's like, I just want to see him rebounding shots for the players because that's what an assistant coach has got to do, and I thought that was great. But I actually like it. I feel that, you know, having a different head, I feel it will keep players honest. Not that they weren't honest as well. Yeah. I think he'll call their bullshit out if there is bullshit, right? So I don't mind that as well. Not that Brian wouldn't do that anyway, but I just feel that there was times where I just think having that type of guy there, I don't see the negative. I really don't. No. And I do see him being a head coach because he's come out and said coaching's always been something I want to do. That tells me he'll be a head coach. I assume, and yes, I would agree, I would assume it's going to be the Sydney Kings, whenever that may be, but it could be something else. You never know.
Yeah, I like it. You know, I don't see a lot of downside to it. In fact, I don't see any.
Yep, but, completely agree. Well, let's move on to the next one.
Yep.
Adam Cook.
Stay with the Kings. Oh, no, stay with the Kings.
Oh, Xavier Cooks. Xavier Cooks has been given a one-month ban. The reason for that is now, I'm pretty sure I've read the article. The way I understand it is, well, literally that ban's done because he's already been literally, you know, from February to March. I don't think it's a month in the season the way I'm reading it. I believe it's now. And the reason is that it is not a performance-enhancing drug is the way I'm reading this. Please correct me if I'm wrong, Boddy. Mm-hmm. It is a recreational drug that has come out and that is giving him the one-month ban. What I did read as well, that doesn't mean the sanction's over because the NBL or the Kings could come over the top of that as well.
Yeah, that's pretty much right. I don't know what else we can say to that. I mean, that's what's happening in today's world, but the recreational drugs exist and would be foolish to pretend they don't. So he's copped his ban. He serves his time. Move on.
Yeah, this is the one I want your answer with. Adam Caporn. I say Caporn. I hope I'm right there.
I say Caporn. You say Caporn.
Tomato. Tomato. Yeah. Is he the right choice? He has been announced as the Australian Boomers. His deputies will be Dean Vickerman, who my understanding will take all the games that's not involving NBA when that's on. But there is still talk about Snyder from Atlanta being some type of involvement and could be associated head coach or something of that nature. Talk to me, buddy.
Look, the thing I like about the Adam Caporn appointment is that he's young and dynamic and we're going forward. It's a new era. It's time to shut the door on these great old players like Joe Ingles and Paddy Mills and Matthew Delvedova, all that crowd. Ta-da, it's that era is over. It's time to turn it over now to Dyson Daniels, Josh Giddey, Jock Landau, the new breed, Johnny Furphy, all these guys that we've got playing over. They've got 15 guys playing either NBA or G League on two-way contracts. So I like that people like Landau are endorsing him and saying that, yeah, we like what he's about as an assistant coach with the Washington Wizards. He's done his time at St. Mary and also at the CRV in Canberra. The only thing I don't like about it is that as an assistant coach, which is what he's doing on a day-to-day basis, as an assistant, he's going to now jump into the head coaching role and it's going to be like 8 grand finals at the World Cup.
Yeah.
It's not like any game we can drop this one.
That's probably my only question mark I have on it. Everything I hear about this guy, he's A+, like really good guy. But to not have head coach experience, I mean, someone's going to say, well, how do you get head coach experience if you don't get made a head coach? Completely agree. But head coach from an Olympic team?
Yeah, national team. No, I don't think that's a good place to start. So that's my reservation. It would have been the same if Matt Nielsen had got the appointment. Probably. It would have been exactly the same. And Dean Vickerman as the associate head coach to take the FIBA windows and the Asia Cup, et cetera. I think that's good because now you get stability because, you know, 1 week it's Mike Kelly coaching that team, then it's Jacob Chance. It's like it's all over the place. So it's good to get that sort of stability that, all right, Capehorn's doing this, Vickerman's doing this, and they're all on the same page. I like that aspect of it.
Okay, good. All right, let's move on. The Pelicans are going to be coming down to the Australia. That's the next news that we heard coming out this week, where they will play 2 games in Melbourne, New Orleans Pelicans, I should say. One will be against Melbourne United, and the other will be against Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, 2 very interesting games. My understanding is that, you know, that the big guns will come down and that'll be really interesting. And what a time for the league that we don't have to go there now. They're coming to us. And that's what I see out of this. And before you answer that, I'll add to that, the big three, Ice Cube, who runs that, they're coming down as well. And they're going to be playing this 3-on-3 competition that they have. So that's 2 big decision makers coming down to Australia. That's good for our sport, buddy.
Yeah, I like the fact that there's an NBA, that this is the first team from the NBA that's coming to Australia. And we get to play them now not at a disadvantage. I mean, we're always at a disadvantage going over there, you know, the jet lag and all that, and playing the 48 minutes and playing the bigger court. We sort of play under their circumstances. So now they're coming and they're going to play under ours. So the result might be a little more interesting than some of those massive blowouts that we've seen over the years, apart from when the 30s, of course, and beat Phoenix Suns. You remember that, don't you?
My God. Let's not go back there. That was an unbelievable game. What was his name, the left-hander that hit 53s?
You know
who I mean. And then he didn't. Then he didn't last the season.
It was trouble. And then
He
didn't last, yeah.
Well, that is the NBL news, and there was a lot of it. So we just wanted to get through to that. So what we'll do now is let's talk about that funny sport, the championship series, or the grand final, as you call it, NBL grand final, game 1, game 2, it's over. Game 1, let's just quickly go through it. Illawarra 88 were beaten by the Melbourne United team, 96. Melbourne United down 10 at halftime, made a fantastic change-up and did exactly what they needed to do to be able to get the wins. And I thought they were brilliant the way they played. Marcus Lee, that decision to put him on Dave O'Hickey, outstanding. So they get the win. We then go into game 2. And Illawarra, on the back of a Tyler Harvey big gun shot, hit the three, put him up by 1, I think it was, in that situation, or 2. And then, was it 2? Yeah, it was 2, sorry. And then Chris Golding had a chance to win it on the buzzer, and that did everything but drop. But let's start. You can start. Let's go game 1. What have you seen?
I saw that Illawarra wasn't really playing all that well, and we're still 10 points up. And that makes me think that on a talent and a style of game, they are the number one in this. Right, they're the number one, and Melbourne. But what Melbourne did in the second half was outstanding, and to hold them to 35 points in the second half when they scored 32. They scored 32 of their own in the last quarter.
In the fourth, like, that's right.
Mm. I thought the eight-point margin in that game flattered Illawarra, but when I looked at the first half and when I looked at overall at how little Trey Kell did, how little Tyler Harvey did, and how little Sam Froling was allowed to do, whereas though at the start of the game, I thought he was going to tear it apart. They were going to him and he was killing their bigs.
Yeah, agree.
So I was looking at game two thinking, no, Illawarra only need a little bit of everyone sort of getting back on the same page, and they're a big chance to win this. But I think the big news story out of game two was Shea Illy getting hurt. You know, he's had some concussion in the past. He couldn't return to the game. Now, apparently he's passed the test, so whether that means he would play game three on Sunday.
What I heard was he passed the concussion test, but then he had concussion-like symptoms after. Not 100% sure how that works, but anyone that's had concussion like him before, that is very scary. I'd be shocked if he plays, but then I'm not shocked. So I really don't know what to expect. Look, I enjoyed both games. I thought they were great to be able to hold Illawarra in the second half. I mean, they outscored him by 18, Boddy. That's pretty impressive, right? And I thought, even though Dellavedova had the 18 points from 17 shots, he just impressed me. And I want to just ask you a question, right? There's talk he may be leaving Melbourne. He wants like a three-year deal because he wants to go to LA. That's what I'm hearing, right? So he wants a three-year deal. So he goes to LA. Yep. And I'm telling you, I think there's a team out there that would give it to him because he's playing really good basketball. And he'll want a lot of money for 3 years. What do you do if you're a GM?
I move on. Look.
Really?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. Look, he's still a good player, but he's not who he thinks he is. Okay. When his agent sits down at the negotiating table, he's not coming off an NBA championship with the Cleveland Cavaliers last season. That's a long way in the rearview mirror. So let's be realistic. In the same way as Adam Caporn's been appointed head coach of the Boomers to move forward, the league has to move forward. Now, if Delhi wants to play or wants to go to LA, I strongly recommend there's some he goes down the Flight Center because they've got a whole bunch of specials going on to LA and Dallas. You can go to Dallas as well if he wants to. But I think if he's on our Olympic team, we're in trouble.
If I'm a GM in the NBL, and I'm not talking about Olympics anymore. That's got a decision that's going to be made by higher up people. I think I'm giving him a 3 year deal. I think the guy, he's one of those players that I think that can play for another 3 years because he will keep playing that dogged hardness that is notorious for Delhi. And what will he do? He'll lead the people around him.
Well, he does
and
that.
That's where I think now, I'm sure he's not asking for small money. That's a different question, right? But if you can get him and it's not blowing your budget crazily, I don't mind it. I don't mind it.
No, it's an interesting one. And let's face it, he made those assists in those last second plays that Melbourne had won using the same player a few times. He always made the right call. So in that scenario, he's still very good. I'm not saying he's not a good player.
No, don't get me wrong.
I'm just saying he's on the other side of the hill now. So if you're heading down the hill, no matter who you think, as your body gets older, and he used to play an 82-game schedule, that's going to catch up with you.
Yeah.
That's like people talking now about, Paddy Mills is going to come back and what an impact he'll have. Well, I think about what Paddy's been doing in the NBA for the last 2-3 years, he's been sitting. He's been sitting. So you're expecting him now to come and be an NBA superstar, and he's going to have young guys in his face going, like, we don't care who you are. Show us. He's going to get a lot of disrespect if he comes back, and he's going to be expected to dominate our league at a time when other guys his age are hanging up their boots.
Yeah, when you're 7'1" like a bogey, you can dominate a league in different ways.
Right.
I get it.
That's different.
Let me throw a couple of things. I want to talk about game two really quickly, right? Toddy Blanchfield had 0 points, okay. Jack White did not take a shot in the game. He had 0 points, 6 rebounds in 18 minutes.
He was in foul trouble, though. He was in foul trouble, though, Brett.
Buddy, no shot?
Yeah, okay. But, but he and Rob Lowe and Marcus Lee were all in pretty deep foul trouble pretty quickly.
I reckon in 18 minutes, you're getting a few shots up.
No, I'm Delhi. I'm passing it to people, mate.
No,
I'm
you're
getting
not.
my joy.
No, you're not. You no, might look, even get a foul
that's an
to get into the free
amazing
throw
stat.
line. You may
Brad,
even get to the free throw.
Yeah, that's an amazing stat. I haven't seen that one. Oh, that's an amazing stat.
Ian Clark, 31 points. Great. Golding,
16
again.
In the last quarter.
I know. Unbelievable. Tyler Harvey, 24. Trey Kell, 18. Again, there's that 40, right? Mm. They get 40. I mean, 42, obviously. But they get that 40 piece. They win games, right? Yeah. And it wasn't the prettiest 40 from both of them, but they win games. Sam Frolling, he got more minutes. He got 23 points, and I thought, and Wani Swakalabulik was very good as well with his 12 points. So,
I like the way he used Lockie Olbrich with Sam Frolling at times. I thought that looked good.
Yeah.
I thought he did something. I mean, Todd Blanchfield was magnificent against Southeast Melbourne. Good in the first quarter of game one. Since then, he's been down. So you go with the next guy.
And yep, absolutely.
I think that was good coaching.
A shout out to the Blanchfield family. Had a baby girl this week. Yep. So I just want to say congratulations to them. Before we get out of here, Boddy, I do want to ask you, who wins game three?
Illawarra does, and then they go back to Melbourne. And I think Melbourne, with their backs to the wall, probably get that. Now I think we go back to home court, like, because they've negated home court. Both teams can win on the other team's court, no question. So, but I think this is the one Illawarra gets on Sunday. Then they go to Melbourne, and that's backs against the wall. United in that situation is pretty good. Goes to game five.
So you're predicting.
I hope.
Yeah, so do I. I got to be honest. I jumped up and down when Illawarra won that game, just because we get more games. Right. I just want more games.
I'm happy for United fans because they get to see their team beaten in a way that is memorable. Like, they don't get beaten by 20 or something. They have to get beaten by some kind of colossal shot. We're talking.
I was going to say they got nightmares on Jack McLean. Yeah, game five last year.
And then Jesse Wagstaff a couple of weeks ago, like, he hits that three that forces it, that ties it before
you're
Chris Golden
wins
it.
You're not from Adelaide by any chance, are you?
I'm just saying. Like, yeah, of course they're going to say, I think we've got a really good team because it takes something very special to beat us. So hats off to the United fans.
Come on, give me your nudge nasty.
Look, I'm just looking back at the WNBL's awards, and they were determined, Brad, not by votes by coaches or things of that nature. They were determined by a panel that I don't know who appointed the panel. Perhaps there was a panel that appointed the panel, but we had people that were sideline reporters and podcasters and referees, and honestly, like, the head of the WNBL, Christy Collier, she was on it. How could she tell who's a good coach or a bad coach? So there are awards such as Shannon Seabone winning his fifth coach of the year, which is more than Tom Maher, who's the greatest women's coach in that league's history. So it's a little bit of a nonsense. I'm thinking, what the hell are you doing with the panel? Don't ever do that again. What's your Rosenrella?
Wow. There it is. BOTINAGY.com.
Just give it
the best writer in the game. Get out there. Some good articles this week, by the way. Mine is the flopping. I think we're getting back to it too much. Yeah. And it's not just, I know a lot of people say CG43. Yes, he is. But there's others. It's not just him. And some of the flops are getting a bit out of hand. And the way I treat a flop, and this is where I was told when they do that, you know, hand flashing forward, what is a flop, is if the contact hits the person and the reaction is less than what the contact is, that's a flop. It's 50 times more and it's getting worse. And I don't like it. And I don't want a foul called where, let's say, they don't have a challenge, right? The coach gets away and doesn't have a challenge, and we're going to have this stupid flopping thing that something happens and it's going to be the worst flop. I don't want to go to that soccer game. Right, where a flop gets caused, right? Mm-hmm. And then you get three or four free throws and stuff like that. Now, I will say that was a foul at the end by, I think it was Tyler Harvey.
Terrible foul.
That was a foul, right? And that was a no question. So I'm not meaning that one.
No.
And I don't know a couple of others, but there was just some that I looked at. I thought the one where Chris ran into Darius Days, you'd probably call a foul on Darius Days, but the reaction was not as much as what it was. But then there was another one where he got hit in the head, Chris Golding. I think that might have been game one. And the foul wasn't even called. So then I sit there as a player, Boddy, and I say, maybe I have to overreact, otherwise they won't damn call.
Yeah.
So that's the question I've got for you. What do you do?
Well, look, I think the whole thing with flopping, it's about coaches. It's about the coaches. You get an NBL or a WNBL coach by themselves and you say, what do you think about flopping? And they will say the same thing. It's a blight on the game. It's terrible. It should be eradicated. But when their team gets the benefit of a flop call because one of their players did it, they're all very, very quiet. You know, I see coaches making the flop motion on the sideline and it makes me laugh. You know, when I see John Reilly do that, having looked at Jesse Wagstaff's career, or I see Dean Vickerman do that, having looked at Chris Golding's career, you just kind of laugh to yourself because they're indicating somebody in the opposition is flopping when they've got a flopper themselves. So it comes back to the coaches. If they wanted to cut it out, they could tell their players, don't do that nonsense, but they're all very quietly happy when they get the benefit of that call. All right.
So
for me, Brad, it's always the same thing for me. You want to stop it? The first time you think you even get a hint of an exaggerated head throwback or whatever, you tech foul the player's coach. It's erased immediately.
So let me throw this at you. What about giving each coach one extra challenge, a half, for the flopping?
Oh, well, no. No, because then you go, we need one extra challenge for the travel. Because I think, you know, Ian Clark might have travelled against Perth and Tyler Harvey might have travelled. You know, you start going to be going.
By
to
the way, I didn't I didn't really want that. I just wanted to hear your opinion on that. all right, so you've got Illawarra winning game three. I'm in a real predicament here because I said at the beginning, I do not believe any of these teams will lose two in a row. Because I think they're both so brilliantly coached that the adjustments will be made where the team gets the opposite team. So in this instance for game three would be Melbourne. But if they don't have Shaley and going back in Illawarra, I can't pick against them, mate. I just can't. I just think they're a really, really good team. Yeah. I think Tyler Harvey.
That's the news story that we'll all be watching with interest.
Yeah, and, you know, you look at Tyler Harvey, is that the Ian Clark situation now where he goes off, right? Because Ian was struggling there, and now look at him. We're getting out of here, buddy. Thank you so much. I'll give you the last say to say goodbye to everyone, and thank you for another great week.
Yeah, well, in the words of the great Hungarian Laszlo Kovács, Viszont Lata.
On a serious note, what does that mean?
It means see you later, Brad. See you next week, man. Actually, yeah, we might have a champion by this time next week. So.
Very well could be. Should have. See ya.